winning? Is that what you think it's about? I'm not trying to win. I'm not doing this because I want to beat someone, or because I hate someone, or because I want to blame someone. It's not because it's fun. God knows it's not because it's easy. It's not even because it works, because it hardly ever does. I do what I do because it's right, because it's decent. And above all, it's kind. It's just that. Just kind. If I run away today, good people will die. If I stand and fight, some of them might live. Maybe not many, maybe not for long. Hey, you know, maybe there's no point in any of this at all, but it's the best I can do. So I'm gonna do it, and I will stand here doing it till it kills me. You're going to die too. Stand with me. These people are terrified. Maybe we can help a little. Why not? Just to the end. Just be kind.
Part-time fanboy.
Part-time fanboy doing my thing.
More powerful than a locomotive.
All right, well, let's get started. I am Christian Horn, and this is Part-Time Fanboy, and I am here with my good friend and Doctor Who scholar, Barry Negrin, who is an expert in all things Doctor Who. And I should also note that it is a very momentous occasion. This is Part-Time Fanboy, episode 200.
Dun, 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 dun.
Exactly, on cue. Raise the fanfare. There it is. But yeah, we've actually been gone away for about a month or so. This has kind of like been a long break. The last episode we did was just so great. The episode on Wonder Woman. And
yeah, I've been meaning to listen to that.
Yeah, no, it's actually a really great episode. And I actually got sick for a weekend, and you know, things have been busy. End of school, end of Girl Scouts for my daughter, end of ballet season. So there've been a lot of things, and also I'm working on a small project, which I'm going to announce like in a couple of weeks. Very small, no big deal, but it has been sort of a little bit of a time suck on my end. So that's why the podcast has been down. It is called Part-Time Fanboy. It is a part-time endeavor, but you know, I do try to keep it on a somewhat weekly schedule, but we are back now because there was such a giant momentous occasion that I wanted to talk about it. I was dying to talk about it, and Barry Negrin is one of my favorite people to talk about Doctor Who with. So I feel
very warm and fuzzy when you say things like that.
Well, but it's the truth, and we've never met in person, unfortunately. I don't get back east as much as I used to, and I would like to. And last time I do was for New York Comic Con, and our schedules just didn't line up. But
right.
I do feel like we kind of know each other, even though we internet know each other. But you are definitely one of the people that I truly enjoy speaking about nerd stuff with and interacting on Facebook with and stuff like that. So I'm always thankful that you come on Part-Time Fanboy.
We will meet someday. I know it.
Someday will come. I can't believe I've been doing this for 200 episodes. Let me just say that. You know, if we stepped into TARDIS back to the first episode, this was like, you know, kind of done as a lark between a couple of friends. We were sitting around on New Year's Eve one year. I can't remember what year, like 4, 5 years ago, something like that. And it was like, let's do a podcast. And we kind of did. And, you know, people's schedules, people have babies, people, you know, move out of state, people, you know, do different things, get projects going. And, you know, people have come in and out of this podcast, but I guess the one thing that I kind of want to say, including yourself, is, you know, to thank all the people who have either come on as interviews or been involved in the podcast, come on a weekly basis. You know, I just appreciate everyone's participation more than anyone can know, because obviously this is not the Nerdist podcast. This is not like Kevin Smith's podcast. This is the Part-Time Fanboy podcast. And it's sort of an endeavor of love on my part. And just, you know, thank you to anyone who's ever listened. Thank you to anyone who's come on and been in an interview. And thank you to anyone who, to the people like Corey, Ian, Paul, Liad, yourself, anyone that, Jason Holtham, you know, anyone that's ever come on and been a regular and been a guest, I really appreciate it. So,
well, and on behalf of all of those people and myself, we want to thank you for having 200 episodes of the Part-Time Fanboy Podcast.
200 episodes of nerdy babbling. Yeah. Well, you know, so, yeah, I mean, that being said, let's move on to what we're actually here to talk about, which to me ended up kind of being a big deal. And I'm sure for you, because as we've said many times, this is, you are old Who and I am new Who, or yes, you are classic Who and I am current Who, however you want to do it. You've been a fan for such a long time. And I am more, even though I've seen like several of the older episodes on DVD or streaming or whatever, you know, I am like, to me, this is like season 10, series 10. And to you, this is series what?
36.
So, you know, but so to you, I think there was a lot of, there was a lot of like Doctor Who nerd stuff going on in these finales.
Oh, tremendous.
Yeah. I mean, even as sort of like a current fan, I'm smart enough to pick up on and be like, hey, wait a minute. They're calling out some old stuff here. That must be fantastic for people who have been into the show for such a long time,
like somebody, for example, like Stephen Moffat.
Yeah,
who's been a fan for a long time.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. You know, I mean I guess the thing that I wanted to sort of address was like this season for me started off like really cold, like after the sort of water episode, the pilot, and then the smile, the emoji robot episode. This was the first time in Doctor Who, current Doctor Who history, where I was not watching it on the night of or the next night. I actually let them pile up. Also, part of the reason, too, is that I wanted to watch them with my daughter because she's sort of gotten old enough to the point of where she likes them and she enjoys them. So some of the bits can be a little bit intense for her. But, you know, she's at the point where she kind of enjoys this, like, sort of not grown-up sci-fi drama. But you know what I'm talking about. Sort of a PG, sort of PG.
It's a little scary.
Yeah, a little scary. But okay, like, sort of once you're past the 10-year-old point, I think. So that was one of the big reasons that I had kind of like kept them stacking up. But, you know, the biggest reason was that I haven't even finished Class yet. I watched the first two episodes.
Neither
of Class.
Did I. I wanted to, I just, you know, life and truths.
Yeah. Well, they're stacked up on my DVR. I just haven't gotten around to watching them.
To tell
the truth, I still haven't finished the last season of Arrow or Legends of Tomorrow, but they actually showed up on Netflix, so I was able to clear some space off of my DVR.
Oh, that's good.
Yeah. Good. But this was the first Doctor Who season that I was just like really like lukewarm, where I was just like meh, you know. And it's sad. I don't know if it's just that I'm getting older or that.
No, it was an uneven season.
Yeah.
Were definitely. In fact, it started off sort of mediocre. I was not crazy about the opening episode, the pilot.
Yeah.
For a couple of reasons. We discussed it actually back in April.
Yeah.
That, you know, I mean, the basic premise was that it was almost like a reboot of the whole series where the Doctor is a professor at a university and he's been there for a while and Nardole is his wisecracking sidekick. And he basically adopts this student, Bill, to teach her about the cosmos and stuff like that. And, you know, lots of critics were saying, you know, this was like a great way for new fans to get into the series because it was like a soft reboot.
Yeah.
And to be honest, I've been watching this since the 1970s. I don't need a soft reboot. I'm well aware of what the series is about. I understand that, you know, there are generations of people who've been born after me that might want to get into it. But, you know, for me, it really was unnecessary. It didn't do much for me. And I thought the alien was stupid. Because, I mean, she was cute. The sort of blob of oil from an alien ship that
water
turned
creature
into a very cute girl who got along very nicely with Bill. But what really bothered me, as I think I mentioned back in April, was that this fluid alien can sort of appear across space and time. You know, the TARDIS flees 100 million years into the future across the universe. Boop, she's there.
Yeah.
I mean, come on.
Yeah.
Come on.
Yeah. Yeah, there's a lot of, for me, the episode that threw me off, the pilot I thought was okay. Like, I was like, okay, they're setting up the new companion. You know, they're sort of giving her a love interest. They're showing her charm. And
I liked her. I thought Bill was actually a very spunky character. One of the things I liked about her, in contrast to some of the modern companions, is that she didn't have a crush on the Doctor. She wasn't in love with the Doctor.
She loved him.
She loved him like a grandfather.
Yeah. Yeah,
or
yeah.
You know, cranky uncle.
Parental figure or something like that.
Yeah.
Yeah. The pilot was really sort of Pearl Mackey, who, you know, I loved Bill. I loved Pearl Mackey's, like, she just had this, like, sort of, like, for lack of a better term, effervescence, like this energy that kind of radiated off of her. And she was very lovable and likable. And it sort of gives her it puts her through all the paces of, like, you know, being upset about something, falling in love, ups and downs emotionally. So it was a very good episode for her, but it was kind of silly in the way it kind of like resolved itself. But the episode that really threw me off this season was Smile, the emoji robots thing. My daughter loved it. She loves emojis, you know, because of emojis, and she started getting scared. But for me, I was very much like, I was just like, really? Is this what we've come to after 10 seasons? We're doing emoji death row? I just thought like the whole thing was a little bit silly, and the villains were kind of, obviously this is sort of like playing into a trend and trying to say something about that trend of emojis, you know, and
right.
I got that. But I just thought like the whole thing played itself out very kind of, for lack of a better term, again, dopily. Like,
I agree.
It just didn't play out very well for me. And for me, it almost seems sort of like, the Chronicles, Sarah Jane Chronicles. It seemed almost like a kiddie episode, you know?
Right.
And I was like, is this where we're going with this season? Because the first season didn't seem to be very much an episode that I could, the first episode didn't seem like an episode that I could take very seriously, and then the second one was, and as they kept going, Thin Ice, Knock Knock, I sort of started getting worried, more and more worried. I was like, okay, these are tolerable, they're not terrible, but
I thought actually I liked Thin Ice because it struck me like a classic Doctor Who episode. Yeah, because you know, he's not saving the entire universe, he's saving basically a few people in London and a sea creature.
Yeah.
So, you know, and it was, and in the old days, they would go back to Victorian England often because the sets are cheaper to design.
Yeah.
You know, and it was a little bit dopey, but you know, it was very similar to me to the modern Who episode with the Star Whale.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, because you had the sea creature that was enslaved and it was generating fuel and it was going to be its poop was going to be a replacement for coal.
Yeah.
So instead of powering Starship Britain, it was powering Britain.
Yeah. That's right. Yeah. And actually, there have been a lot of people, I mean, even the finale, people who are saying that there was a lot of repetition this year.
Yeah. Oh, totally.
And I would also say that I think Moffat, and we've had this discussion before, does tend to repeat himself, particularly with villains where, you know, Blink, he does like sort of different themes on that sort of creation that he made, different variations of the Blink monsters, you know.
Right.
It's interesting because the season really did not kick in for me up until you got to Oxygen. And
Oxygen was great.
Yeah, Oxygen was the one that made me sit up in my chair and go, like, okay, like, this is it. We're back. Like we're, I'm ready to go. Like, you know what I mean? It was about something. It was talking about, you know, I mean, basically there's this whole thing of, like, corporatism and how much are you worth versus how much can you produce and, like, you know, all this, like, really interesting stuff that it talked about without, like, actually talking about it, you know what I mean? And
very classic Doctor Who. There was a fourth Doctor story called The Sun Makers, set on Pluto, where a corporation was running the artificial suns that were keeping everybody alive, and everybody was basically owed this company that, you know, decades of wages for the privilege of getting the sun. And the Doctor's main thrust in that episode was to bring down the corporation.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
That's really interesting, because now we're talking about Moffat sort of pulling from older episodes, or even what I've accused him of is sort of like pulling from himself. You know what
I mean? Like, yeah, especially he borrows not just from recent Doctor Who, which I find to be lazy, but he borrows from, like, Sherlock.
Yeah.
You know, like, for example, when we find out that Missy was trapped in the vault, that was exactly like Sherlock season 4. You know, Sherlock's sister Eurus is trapped in that mental asylum.
Oh, yeah, yeah. It's, you know, it's really interesting. I kept wondering who was in the vault, and my daughter picked it out right away. She's like, oh, it's that woman Missy. And I was like, what? And she's like, oh, yeah, it's that. And I was like, no, it's not. No. And then the big reveal happened, and I was like, oh, wow. Good on you. You're a smart kid. I am a dumb adult. Like, I was just
You failed the Kevin Foxworthy, the Jeff Foxworthy test.
Exactly. Am I smarter than a fifth? That's true. That's true. But yeah, Oxygen was definitely the episode that it reminded me of what I really love about Doctor Who, what I love about the modern iteration. And
I was on the edge of my seat, which I don't find myself there very often.
Yeah, yeah.
And the you know, when we first saw the first couple of minutes of Oxygen, and we saw that these would look like zombies coming after the Doctor and Bill and Nardole, I thought, oh my God, space zombies, really?
Oh, I this love is it, but go ahead.
I thought it was stupid, but they explained it perfectly. They said, no, they're just corpses. The suits are coming after them. I'm like, oh, okay, I can live with that.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. It's funny because Knock Knock was the first episode, the one before it, where I was like, I don't know if I should be watching this with my little kid, like the wood creature, like the person stuck in the wall, and I was like, oh no, and I kept having to say, like, are you okay, and she's like, Dad, I'm fine, and I'm like, wow, we're already to that point, but I know that towards the end of the episode, she definitely started getting a bit more freaked out, but yeah, Knock Knock was where I was like, okay, we're getting a little more sort of gruesome again, and then Oxygen was like, we're off to the races, and then Extremis, which I found, you know, the sort of two-parter, I found little bits of it silly and sort of repetitive again, you know, alien kind of taking over the world.
Monks were just like silence.
Yeah, 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 exactly. Yeah, there was nothing really new there. But it still, like, kept the momentum going. Like, Capaldi, it seemed like Capaldi really kicked in after Oxygen. Like, I felt like he was doing a good job, but when episode 5 happened, that's when I sort of, he clicked, I clicked, everyone sort of clicked, and then through Extremis, even though it felt like, oh, I've kind of seen this sort of before, maybe even on Torchwood or, you know, something else, I very much enjoyed it.
It was I enjoyed the fact that it was a story that went spanned 3 episodes.
Yeah.
That was nice. I liked the fact that, you know, the Doctor was blinded in Oxygen.
Yeah.
And that became like a key plot point in the later 2 episodes.
Yeah.
You know, and the fact is that he's not indestructible, you know, like he can't just sort of magically. I always got the sense that David Tennant had this sort of indestructibility about him. Like, you know, the Master
David Tennant.
going to age him. Look, I like David Tennant.
I love David Tennant. David Tennant
doctor,
is my doctor. Anyway, go ahead.
You're such a fangirl. but like he could be aged, you know, 1,000 years by the master, and then just through the love of the people on the planet Earth, he could come back to his young, dashing self. But, you know, here you've got grumpy old Peter Capaldi who's blinded in space, and guess what? He's still blind.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. That was a very good – and you know what was really funny? I mean, I thought it was a cheat when he pulled out the sunglasses, and it was like he's basically like Daredevil, you know, where he can kind of see, but he can't see. But when they pull that off in – I forget, is it The Lie of the Land towards the end of the episode or Pyramid? Whichever one where Bill basically sells off the human race to give him his eyesight back to save.
That was at the Pyramid or the End of the World.
Yeah, that was very good because I just love that bit where he says, I can't see the, you know, it finally shows because at first it seems like, oh, I'm blind, but there's a cheat. You're not really blind. But when it comes to being able to read the sort of the readout on the number to the room that he needs to get out of or he's going to get poisoned. It is very.
He was screwed.
Yeah, he was definitely screwed, and that's when I went, oh my gosh, he's not like you just said. He doesn't have a way out of everything, and I think you're right. I think this is very much the first time where I really felt like he was vulnerable. I felt the doctor was could be hurt or even taken advantage of. He always seems to just be on top. You know, and
always have a
way out of everything.
Right. He's always thinking ahead of everybody, and he's always got, you know, he's always 5 steps ahead. And, you know, just when the villain is twirling his mustache saying, I've got you now. And the doctor says, oh, no.
Yeah.
I've got you.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
He was actually pretty screwed right there.
Yeah. He was definitely screwed. But Bill sells out the human race saves him. But everything turned out okay. And I mean, even the episodes after that, I really did like the Empress of Mars.
I thought that was terrific.
Yeah, it was really good. It was really good. I like that one. I love the concept of like, what is it? Colonial, British people being on Mars and having been there or having been there first. And, you know, I love the opening of that episode where they're at NASA and they're like counting down and they all just turn up and everyone's like, who are these guys? And there's God Save the Queen on the thing. And I loved the design of the Martians, which, you know, obviously they have shown up before, but the Ice Warriors. But the design of the Empress was particularly impressive to me. She was very creepy and very kind of like scary. And I love the whole bits of where she's trying to talk to Bill. She's like, I don't want to talk to these guys. You're the female. I want to deal with you. That sort of stuff. I loved. That was a very good episode. So, I mean,
And stylistically, it had sort of that great steampunk Edgar Rice Burroughs feel to it.
Yeah, you're totally right. Yeah, design-wise, I thought it was great. As ridiculous as it sounds, I loved the British uniforms. I loved the way they all kind of talk to each other. You know, the little slang that they used from sort of their time period. I just thought that was a very fun episode. And again, that reminded me again why I'm like, oh, this is goofy, but it's goofy in a fun sort of early Star Trek, original Star Trek kind of way.
Right, and you still also, it wasn't like Robots of Sherwood goofy, which was fun and I enjoyed, but there you never had the sense that the Doctor was in trouble for a second.
Yeah.
Here, it's like, crap, I don't have my TARDIS here, I'm kind of stuck on Mars.
Yeah. It's interesting because you sort of hit on a theme, I think of the second half of the season, and, you know, as we sort of get to the finale, where the Doctor is... I mean, I think it really is the very first time he sort of felt vulnerable, you know, where he appears to be vulnerable or he's sort of losing his grip a little bit. Did you sort of get that sense as things, particularly in the last two episodes? I mean, in the finale, World Enough in Time and The Doctor Falls. I mean, in those episodes, I really felt, I think for maybe the first time ever, I really got the sense that he's in over his head this time.
Well, yeah, I mean, he didn't have that sort of smug, I'll get us out of this one.
Yeah.
Plan. I'll get a plan 10 minutes from now.
Yeah.
But, you know, I mean, he'd also remember his hands had been glowing sporadically for the last 3 or 4 episodes. He's aging, he's dying, this doctor, and he knows that his time is up soon. So perhaps maybe he was getting a little reckless, the same way that Clara was when, you know, towards the end of Face the Raven, she's basically had what seemed like a death wish.
Yeah.
And, you know, unlike Clara, though, he can regenerate.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Well, the thing of it is, I mean, I really felt like it's really weird. I didn't feel like it was a recklessness. I just felt like I said before, there was a real sense to me that this is the first time he's sort of in over his head. And I don't, you know, Capaldi has had that sort of like smug, like in the past 2 seasons. I mean, this is his 3rd season, but the 2 seasons before that, particularly season 1, I mean, smugness on the verge of just being an a-hole. But
yeah, I love that.
Yeah, I know you love that. And but I'm really glad that in his 2nd season, they softened him up a bit. But he has had that smug. In this, I really, for the first time, I think it really plays, it shows Capaldi's strength as an actor. There was a sense of helplessness about him that I've kind of sensed a bit in some of the younger ones, but not this dire. And I don't know what it is, like a sense of weariness, a sense of tiredness, a sense of, and I don't know if that's because Capaldi himself is older, and you know, from what I've read a little bit about, you know, the shooting schedule does kind of sort of take its toll on him.
Right.
I mean, there were episodes this season where he was kind of running, and I'm like, ooh, yeah, he's looking a little sort of creaky there. But I really felt like, or maybe it's just.
Oh, wait, didn't Bill even say that he runs like a, what was it, a constipated penguin?
I don't know. Yeah, something like that. I can't remember what it was. She made a comment about that. But I really felt like it. You know what I think it is? I think it is that Capaldi, not. Is physically incapable. I think he's just an older man with a lot more world experience, and he can bring this sort of weariness of, you know, life to it, where maybe these younger actors haven't been able to sort of have that depth of experience to draw from. Does that make
right.
sense?
No, totally. I agree. I mean, that was one of the concerns I had when Matt Smith took over the reins, because he's so young, and he's not only young, he's young looking. But, you know, he took the tack of being sort of like a nutty professor type.
Yeah.
And I thought he captured somebody who could pass for 1,000 or 1,100. So I thought he had that, but he still had that sense of wonder about him. And here, you know, the Capaldi is playing it much darker. You know,
yeah.
he's tired.
Yeah.
You know, in fact, he was even telling Nardole in the beginning of the season, you know, I promised I wouldn't do this anymore. I'm done, you know, taking companions. Because he was broken up about Clara, even though he sort of forgot her a little bit because of that device that exploded on him.
Yeah.
But, you know, he's like, I just can't do this anymore. I can't lose any more people. So, you know, he was really, I think, very ripped up in this episode, or the tail end of World Enough in Time, when he finally gets down to the bottom of the ship and he finds that Bill is now a Cyberman.
Yeah. I mean, let's talk about this finale, because it was pretty spectacular.
I have to agree.
It was very interesting to me. I mean, despite, you know, we'll get to the ending and stuff like that. It played out in a really interesting way. Well, part of this whole season has also been the doctor sort of struggling with Missy's rehabilitation, right?
Yes.
That has been like an ongoing theme. Once you find out what's in the box and that he's taken on this responsibility, Missy, formerly known as the Master, to sort of rehabilitate her, because the backstory being that they've known each other since they were kids. At one point, they were really good friends, right? And they sort of went their opposite ways. It was really interesting because I was sort of, and you can correct me on this, my remembering, I was kind of explaining the Master and how to my daughter, you know, explaining how he used to be a man, and you know, they're Time Lords and they regenerate and stuff like that. And I will admit that Missy and the Master being in the same episode and being the same person threw her off a lot. Like, she was not getting it. She's like, I don't understand this. How can they be a man and a woman? How can they be in the same place? But she kind of asked me, like, why is he called the Master? And I, the way I explained it, if I remember correctly, is, well, the Doctor calls him, they give them, so, oh, and they went through that whole bit of like, oh, he's, his real name is Doctor Who, and his name is the Doctor.
Oh, she, yeah. He was just, she was just playing around.
No,
that
no,
was
I know, I know. But she's, you know, she was asking me, like, why is he called the Master? And I said, well, they take the names on of what they want to be. So the Doctor took the name the Doctor because he wants to help people and he wants to be the Doctor. And the Master took the Master because he wants to be the Master of everyone. He wants to rule everyone.
He wants to rule the universe.
Yeah,
right.
He wants to rule the universe. And if I remember that sort of old school explanation correctly, you can correct me if I'm wrong. It sounds like I got it right.
I think you got it dead on.
But, you know, that's sort of a big theme during this whole season. And the actress who plays Missy, who I don't know her name off the top of my head, is
Michelle Gomez.
Oh, my God. She is spectacular.
She is. She's got very expressive eyes.
Yep.
And, you know, it's interesting because I've seen her, you know, not dressed up as Missy. I've seen her in street clothes.
Oh, really?
Not on the street, but, yeah, you know, in various videos.
Photos and on the interweb.
She looks a lot younger. Like, she's basically our age in real life.
Interesting.
But, you know, as Missy, she could easily be 2,000 years old. I mean, you know, she's wearing that crazy Victorian getup. She's like a twisted Mary Poppins, especially now that she has the sonic umbrella.
Yeah. No, I mean, it's sort of a great bit that runs through the whole season, and it's really fantastic, their interplay. And what's also great, too, is Nardole. First of all, Nardole.
Oh.
I love this guy, and I'm really ticked, spoilers, obviously, that he's probably not coming back, because I think that that is a character that, I mean, he's just gold. He is just gold. And when we've talked in the past of, like, why can't the Doctor have a male companion? Like, Nardole, to me,
He was perfect.
He was absolutely 100% perfect, and is a character that, to me, almost should be a permanent part of the Who mythos, you know what I mean? Just,
you know,
keep him around.
He should have his own show.
Yeah, practically. I think he's just so great as the sort of foil to the Doctor, even more so than any of the female companions, because he's sort of like, it's like he's like, oh, I know what you're about. You know what I mean? He's not taking any of his guff, and he's just really witty writing for that character, and a really great performance from the actor.
Well, I mean, yet another thing that's great about Nardole is he's not from Earth.
Yeah.
You know, yes, it's easy to get Earth people because that's where the show is set. But, you know, the fact that he's an alien, and the fact that he's, you know, he's familiar with advanced technology. He can pilot the TARDIS. He's apparently quite good with a computer. You know, and it doesn't have to be like when they upgraded Clara's abilities in the Spoonhead episode, The Bells of St. John, where she's basically a school teacher slash babysitter that gets, you know, upgraded a little bit. To be smart. I mean, she was smart to begin with. I don't want to knock Clara because I do like her as a character.
You hate Clara.
not at all. I like her way more than Rose.
Yeah. No Rose trashing anymore. I love Rose.
But you know, like Nardole, yeah, that's the whole thing. It's like he would defy the Doctor. He would basically say, we talked about this, we're not doing it this way. He sort of reminded me a little bit of like a Romana type, you know, somebody who's close to being the Doctor's equal.
Yeah. Absolutely. That's really smart. Romana should have been through her series, but devolved into sort of like a hapless assistant. You know, but Nardole just that actor knocked it out of the park. What's his name? Matt Lucas. He just nailed it with that whole season. And the thing that I kept thinking while I was watching. He's like, where did they find that guy? I mean, where did he...
I think he's famous already.
Is he really?
I think he's like a comedian there.
Oh, really? Oh, well, he's great. I mean, he's just fantastic. I hope that... You know, yeah, comedian, screenwriter, actor, singer. Oh, interesting. Best known for his work in Little Britain. Okay, cool. All yeah. Right. No, I just kept thinking, like, where did they find this guy? And he's spectacular, and he really was great. And to me, it's just unfortunate that they're not keeping him around. But it seems like one of the things that Moffat did, during the season is sort of clear the chessboard, as it were. You know?
Yeah, seriously.
Yeah. But, I mean, World Enough in Time begins with them sort of boarding a giant Bic Pen ship, a flashlight sort of looking thing, the most spectacular looking flashlight that is parked in front of a black hole. And yeah. The ship cannot escape the black hole's orbit, correct?
It almost went too far, but it's very close. It's edging away from the event horizon. It didn't quite get there. But the gravitational pull is strong, so it's sort of stuck. It's just moving, it's backing away very slowly.
Yeah. And this is basically a colony ship, which each level seems to represent different sort of zones.
Biosphere.
Yeah, right. Biospheres, exactly, of the world that it came from. So you've got, like, you know, we get to see a farming community, and another one is a city, and another one is, you know, whatever. However many levels, there's like thousands of floors. And this is just basically a giant ship. And they meet this blue alien he's the pilot, right?
No. He's the janitor.
Oh, he's the janitor. That's right. That's interesting. That's right. That's right. You find out that he's the janitor. But when they arrive, he's freaked out because he's like, which one of you are humans? And they're all like, what do you mean? Why do you care? And he's like, they always come for the humans. And by the end of that episode, you basically find out that it is that the Cybermen are on this ship. You don't know why, but they do come and they do steal Bill, correct? Am I remembering that correctly?
Well, they did. I mean, after the janitor shoots Bill, the girl cannot get a break. You know, she's standing there with a big hole in her chest.
Yeah. She's definitely the hard luck hero of the season, for sure.
Oh, my God. You know, she's got the crappy spacesuit and oxygen. And I mean, you know, it's amazing that she made it as far as she did. But yes, so these weird bandaged people show up and they come get her and bring her down to the basement of the ship, or the bowels of the ship, which, because the ship is 400 miles long and it's pointed away from a black hole, and this is one of the things I love so much about these two episodes, is that because gravity is so much greater at the top of the ship than the bottom of the ship, time moves much more slowly on the bridge than it does in the bowels of the ship.
Yeah.
And the great thing is that really happens in real life.
Uh-huh.
They've observed this in a degree that's so fine that if you live on the 30th floor of a building, they've observed that a clock will move a little bit faster than a clock in the lobby.
Wow. Science.
Yeah. Seriously. And, you know, we're not talking about like some crappy sun god being foiled by a cosmic leaf. This is no Rings of Akaten. This is real relativistic effects that we've observed in the real universe.
Yeah.
So the fact that they played this so beautifully, I'm like, oh, this is great. I didn't drill into it enough to do the math because I didn't know where they were near the black hole. I don't know where the black hole was. But
it's a show about a guy that goes in a blue box.
I know.
Travels through space. I mean, the fact that they even touched on, you know, enough of science for somebody to go, yeah, that works. You know, I mean,
yes.
It's, you know, Doctor Doctor Who is Star Trek science, as far as I'm concerned. But the fact that they touched on that and that they used that as a device, because basically you sort of got what ends up happening is that Bill is at the bottom of the ship, stuck in this weird, awful, again, possibly too scary for my young one, hospital city sort of thing, where they're doing things to humans that you don't know exactly what they are. Did you know what they were doing, like, right off the bat, or?
I mean, part of the problem was that the BBC has been so shit about keeping its secrets this season.
Oh,
that,
okay.
You know, like, weeks ago they said, "Ooh, watch out for the return of the original Mondasian Cybermen." I'm like, thanks. Thanks.
Well, if we're going to talk about that, BBC America, first of all, I'm watching your show, and I'm about 40 minutes in, and you have this commercial break, which doesn't seem like a commercial break, that shows spoilers for the rest of the episode.
Yeah.
And I'm like, why are you doing this? Because I stop and think that the commercials are over, and I watch your stupid commercial, and then I'm like, and then they're like, still to come, Doctor Who. And I'm like, why are you doing that? I'm watching the episode. I'm 40 minutes
worst.
In. Like, my wife made a great crack, like, when we were watching The Doctor Falls last night, where she's like, yeah, you're already 40 minutes in. Like, you're not convinced that you're going to watch the rest of the episode. You know what I mean? Like, come on. Like, why are you doing this? And this season, they started doing that. They didn't do that last season or any other time they've broadcast it on the BBC that I remember. And it just pissed me off. I was like, stop. Because they would show spoilers. They would show something like earlier on in the season, and I'd be like, why are you doing that? It's driving me crazy, you know? But anyway, now that I've got that off my chest.
What they used to do was they used to do an inside look in Doctor Who.
Yeah, that's right.
Which usually was crap. I mean, you didn't really get much extra insight, but you got to see the actors talking about their roles and how they prepared for that scene and what it meant to them. And that was okay. But, you know, every time I would slow down, you know, I'm fast forwarding through the commercials and then I hit what I think the show is on again. I'm like, wait a minute. That's what? It's like, it's like ahead of where I'm supposed to be.
Yeah, exactly.
I know exactly what you're talking
about.
Drove
me nuts. Made me very angry. Stop doing it, BBC America, if anyone is listening from BBC America, because it's terrible. It's a dumb idea. You should stop it. But
I've never seen any other show do that.
I've never really seen that, like, on a network show or any other. I don't know if they're doing it during Orphan Black this season, but they need to stop it. Stop it. Stop it. So you had it spoiled for you. Like, the thing that I was ticked off about it being spoiled was John Sim showing up, because I had heard that he was coming on the show, you know, and once Bill's, like, little friend shows up, who's commonly almost comes off across like a hobbit character little bit, Bill gets taken to the bowels of the ship, and she has her heart, this hole that's blasted into her, replaced with a mechanical part. So that gave me the first clue. I was like, wait, what is going on here? And then you sort of, I don't believe I've ever seen the original episodes with the Cybermen in them, but I may have seen clips. But I was getting an idea, you know, of like where we were going with this. But there was a part of me, not being a big enough Doctor Who nerd, where I was like, no, these aren't Cybermen. This isn't how they make Cybermen, is it? Because it just seemed so off base from what I had imagined in my own head. You know what I mean?
I mean, that's sort of how they came to be. I mean,
it's interesting.
You know, you have they're sort of like the Borg. They're cybernetic beings. There's still some flesh and blood in there somewhere. But they've been upgrading themselves with mechanical parts and computer parts to become better. You know, I never saw the 10th Planet, which was, I think, the first episode of the Cybermen with the first Doctor. I did see the Tomb of the Cybermen. That was on BBC America at one point with Patrick Troughton, the second Doctor, and that was pretty cool. But at that point, they're already, well, a little more mechanized. There's a little less bandage. But they're not quite the full-on hive mind that they are.
No, I mean, I know that that's sort of their origin. I mean, I knew that they used to be human types or humans, and that they were sort of like I don't know what I didn't know what happened. I just figured that they were doing, like you said, like the Borg, like, you know, transforming. But to me, it just seemed like really weird, like the hospital ward and them sitting in chairs and being like, pain, pain, you know, that sort of thing.
Right.
It was very sort of like, I was like, oh, is this how it worked out? But, you know, I was, it was really cool to see, you know, the Bill's guide. During the episode, and I figured out that it was
John Sim.
Yeah, John Sim. I figured out that it was John Sim, but at the same time, the makeup job was so decent that I kept going, is it John Sim? Are they making it to look like John Sim to fake me out? And then John Sim shows up differently, but then John Sim reveals himself as the master, and it's just like a. Like, if you didn't hate the master before, you hated him now. Like,
oh, he's quite an asshole.
John Sim, I mean, it was Tenet, right? It was Martha. It was the Martha years, right? That John Sim did that whole prime minister thing. Like, he was good in that, but this is the first time, you know, he had the goatee, which apparently is a signature of the old master.
Yes,
correct?
And he was wearing, like, the black Nehru jacket.
Yeah.
He owned that role. That was so beautiful.
Yeah.
That was classic old master stuff.
Yeah.
You know, especially part of the problem with the John Sim master in the David Tennant years was that he was crazy. That, you know, that he had been driven insane by the sound of drums in his head. And,
that's right.
You know, with the Time Lords were using him as sort of like a tool to open up the portal so Gallifrey could come back and blah, blah, blah. And he was, you know, sort of past regenerating, and he was shooting lightning from his hands and flying. And, you know, he was really out of control. But
that's right.
This master went back to Gallifrey. He got his head screwed back on right. And he went back to his, you know, conventional evil self.
Yeah.
He wasn't, cross-topic nerd for a second. You know, the John Sim master was previously chaotic evil. Now he's just neutral evil. He's a complete piece of garbage, but he's in it for himself.
Yeah, yeah. He's not the Joker. He's Dr. Doom, I think.
Exactly.
Yeah, yeah. It was really interesting the way he nailed it. I mean, he was just... But what he does to Bill, you know, which is basically trap her for 10 years at the bottom of the ship because time is moving so much faster while the doctor is trying to figure out how to get to the bottom of the ship.
Yeah.
And she is stuck there for 10 years, which is another thing that Moffat, I think, or Russell T. Davies do that? They did.
The Girl Who Waited.
Yeah. What episode was that? I can't remember.
That was The Girl Who Waited.
Oh, okay.
That was in season 6, so I think that was Moffat.
Okay. Well, either way, it felt like a thing that had been done before.
Yeah, it was Moffat. Yeah, because the Amy Pond is she goes to the that planet where the doctor can't go on because there's something in the air he's allergic to.
Yeah.
She goes through the wrong door, pushes the wrong button, and then she's been waiting 36 years. To get rescued.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. So they had done it before. It felt very familiar to me. But at the same time, it was just like torturous. I mean, just imagine this poor woman, you know, she's in college, she's in the prime of her life, and now she's stuck on this dirty, you know, Cybermen planet, probably every minute of her life wondering what is going to happen to her. Is she going to become, I mean, how she doesn't, that was sort of my one bit of complaint with that episode, where you didn't see her sort of evolve from year 1 to year 10. You know what I'm saying? I think by year 10, hopelessness would have set in, and she
really
would have been a much different person.
You really couldn't have told, you couldn't tell just how long it was.
Yeah. And I feel like they could have done a little bit more of that, where...
I mean, she didn't even get any gray.
Yeah, well, she was young enough not to have gray, but, I mean, living in that sort of polluted or whatever awful environment, yeah, she would probably have aged, you know, also with a life of just constant, you know, manual labor. Yeah, she would have looked a lot worse off, but she didn't have that weariness of like, oh, it's never happening. You know, I just didn't get that sense. But I think it's by the end of World Enough in Time, that the very end, it's revealed that she gets turned into a cyber person, cyber woman. Yeah. And it's very much, for me, it's interesting because I really did come to love Bill. I felt that she was a bit of a companion that stood around and didn't do much, but I loved her personality. I loved the way that she interacted with the doctor, and it really, she really became sort of one of my favorites by the end of the season. And to have that happen to her, to me, was a very much like soul crushing in a way, where I was like, that didn't really happen. They're not going to do that.
Right. I mean, and it was quite sad for, I mean, obvious reasons, but you know, you start the next episode, the Doctor Falls, where they're in the that countryside, and
still in the ship.
They're still in the ship, and they you know, these country folk had these laser rifles, and they're knocking off Cybermen, and they're sticking them up as scarecrows. But then Bill shows up, and she doesn't even realize that she's really a cyber person.
Yeah. Dramatic device.
Not the first time we've seen it, though. There was Clara, or I should say Oswin, in Asylum of the Daleks.
That's right. That's why it seemed... That's so weird, man, because so much of this two-parter seems so familiar to me, and now you're ticking them off, you know? And, wow. Anyway, go on. But it was a great dramatic device. I still loved it.
I know.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, it was heartbreaking, but...
It was very heartbreaking. I think with the Clara thing, did she know? No, that's right. It was very sort of like
she didn't
tragic.
Know. No,
that's
I mean, in fact, she thought she was in a spaceship and that the doctor was going to come rescue her. And he shows up in the room and she's like, all right, just come on in.
Yeah.
And he's like, well, kiss the...
Oh,
so awkward.
Damn. So, I mean, so much of this season is just culled from... He's repeating himself again, and
yeah.
I mean, I get. I'm not.
But he did a nice job.
No, I mean they do. So let me call out what's her name? Rachel Talalay.
Yeah.
First of all, she's redeemed herself for anything she did on Tank Girl all those years ago. She directed Tank Girl, which was one of my favorite comics back in the day. It's an awful movie with Lori Petty. Horrible, horrible, horrible movie. But she's done some amazing work on Doctor Who. And I do feel like so much of, obviously there's been a bit of sort of reaching back into his own history, his own history on the show with Stephen Moffat. But Ms. Talalay, if that's how I pronounce it, is it Talalay? Anyway, her direction has been amazing, has been fantastic. And I don't know if on British TV, it's sort of the same as American TV, where they have different directors show up and they're sort of like journeyman directors. They kind of do what the producers, not to take any credit away from people who direct TV, obviously they have expertise and stuff like that, but it's very much sort of seen as a producer, writer, medium television. But I have to imagine that she definitely has input because she's had some of the better episodes on the show, and she's really she did knock it out of the park with these two episodes, and I feel like the sort of repetitiveness of what we've seen before in Who was very much masked by her expertise and direction, if that makes any sense.
No, it makes perfect sense.
Yeah.
And look, the show's been on for 54 years, it's going to repeat itself.
Yeah, that's true too. That's true. Yeah, the thing is like, I wouldn't be ticked off at him if he was pulling from older episodes, which, you know, stuff like The Next Generation did, Star Trek The Next Generation.
Right.
And stuff like that. You're just going to do that. But to pull from yourself, that to me just seems kind of like, whatever, I wrote this.
Lazy.
Here, give it to the writing assistant, change a couple of names, we'll do it again. You know what I mean? You know. But the thing is that Stephen Moffat, I mean, the guy's got a lot on his plate.
Yeah, you know, he's overextended.
I do feel that I wish that he had always just taken full focus and put it on Doctor Who. But then we wouldn't have Sherlock, you know, which is a great show. I still have not watched the final the last season of Sherlock yet. I did watch one episode, but I haven't finished it.
Then I'm sorry I spoiled it for you.
Well, I might have missed whatever you just said. There's a lot. I'm always monitoring the levels and stuff on this podcast while I'm talking to you. So, but I really feel like these past two episodes were the other than Oxygen, were the best of the season, and they really ended up in a climax that just not resolution, but a climax that was fantastic. I don't feel that the sort of the resolution between the Masters was marvelous. Was fantastic.
Oh my God!
The way that
was
played out.
Even although actually I wanted to jump in with just before that, the Missy Master denouement was when the Doctor is trying to convince the both of them to stay in hell.
That speech.
And and it's a nice speech. It's not quite as highfalutin as the Matt Smith speeches.
But it's
so powerful.
Yeah.
It's like, just be kind. Just don't be a dick for 5 minutes.
Well, you know what I kept thinking during that speech was very much. First of all, it does play into that world weariness that Capaldi was playing towards the end.
Yeah.
Where he's just like, I'm done. And it does also address sort of the a-hole, the prickishness that he had in the beginning, which is very much like he's evolved, become something else, and come out the other side. And he's finally figured out, like is he a good man or not? And why he's doing what he does. And it's just to be kind, you know? And while he was making that speech, I just kept thinking to myself, obviously I'm a big Superman fan. I'm like, if you could put a speech like that in a modern Superman movie, you're done. You're just done, because that's what it's all about. That is what we want our heroes to sort of strive for. And it was just, it was beautiful. It was his sort of...
Go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, it's his... To me, it was like his very Shakespearean moment. It was like, it was sort of the St. Crispin's Day speech for me, where it was like, let's just do this, you know? Didn't end up being very effective, but it worked for me. Well, it did.
It sort of did, because clearly it reached Missy, but it did not reach the Master. John Sim was like, I wasn't really listening to any of that. And he was like his typical dick self.
Yeah, and he was great at it. Yeah. But the way that plays out with Missy and the Master, it was just... It's kind of heartbreaking, too, in a way, because I didn't want that to be the last... I mean, obviously, he's a Time Lord. They travel in space and time. I didn't want that to be the last we saw of John Sim, but I really did not want it to be the end for Missy. I have grown to love her so much, and she's such a great villain. And for him to sort of add that tagline of like, don't even try and regenerate because it won't work, you know?
You know what, though? Let's fill in the blanks for the listener that, you know, Missy lures the Master over to him, and before they're going to go downstairs and escape in his TARDIS. And she stabs him very carefully.
Yeah.
And he's impressed because, you know, she's very stealthy. And he said, you know, she said, I would only give you my best. And then as he's bleeding out, you know, and he's going down to the his TARDIS, he shoots her in the back with his laser screwdriver.
Yeah.
Gives her the quote unquote full blast. So you can't regenerate from this one. To which I say bullshit, because the Master has fallen into a volcano. The Master has been completely vaporized and basically turned into what's left of him as a ring.
Yeah.
Not unlike Ming the Merciless in Flash Gordon.
Interesting.
And he's come back. He always comes back. So I don't think it's the last we're going to see of the Master / Missy. Michelle Gomez we're probably done with, but, you know, I'm sure
not.
She'll appear.
She's
I'm
so
sure
wonderful.
There's always... all that time, because apparently John Sim regenerates into her. You know, we get to see some of those episodes maybe, or I'm sure she'll do some of the radio adventures.
Well, the other thing that is great about her, or that gives me hope about her, is that bit where she pushes the Master up against the wall and she says, you'll remember or I remember that I got pushed up against a wall by me. And,
by a scary lady.
Yeah, by a scary lady who told me to, I forget what the circuit was called, but the, you know, who told me to always carry a particular kind of circuit for the TARDIS.
Dematerialization circuit.
Is that what it was? And
I think so.
I just happen to have one here. So obviously what has happened before, you know, Missy knows what happened here. I mean, there's fuzzy memory, they explain, because of the vicinity of the black hole. But in the end,
oh no,
what's that?
It's actually the fuzziness is not just because of the black hole. It's because any time that you have two iterations of the same occupying the same space time, you know, that screws everything up with the way they remember things, and that's how they've always been able to explain when the doctors have been hanging out with each other. They're like, how come I don't remember that? It's like, well, because it hasn't really happened yet to me. And when, you know, the time streams are out of sync.
That's right. That's right.
So,
the vicinity of the black hole is what made him not be able to use his TARDIS and escape. That's right. That's right. That's right. That's great. That's really great. Yeah, no, I mean, that bit between the Master and Missy is just classic. It's one of those moments that you always remember on the show. It is just fantastic the way it all played out. And the interplay between those two during the whole two episodes was just marvelous. Absolutely fantastic.
I love the fact that he was getting a little turned on by her.
Yeah, it was
like,
so great.
That's gross.
Yeah. She's like, really? Yeah, no. But yeah, they end up dying. And then you sort of get to the ending, and this is where you kind of
There was one other thing that I wanted to mention about the Master.
Yeah.
There was an interesting parallel I saw between Bill and the Master, and that is that Bill was telling the Doctor that, you know, like, can you fix this? Like, I'm stuck as the Cyberman. And he's like, yeah, I can't really fix it here. And she's like, if I lose my humanity, I do not want to remain alive.
Yeah.
I don't want to keep going on like this. She doesn't want her to keep on if she's stripped of her humanity.
Yeah.
And the flip side of that is the Master shoots Missy because she's his kinder, gentler future self. He doesn't want to live on with humanity.
That's interesting. That's a really good call. That's interesting. Yeah, I love the bit because, again, my daughter asked me, oh, like, why did he kill her and stuff like that? And it's like he didn't want to be good, you know?
He couldn't
stand being good. And that's like a really hardcore villain thing, you know?
She's ruining his brand.
Yeah, she's ruining his brand. But the way everything sort of played out between those two characters was just fantastic. The tragedy of Bill during the Doctor falls was just heartbreaking. You're just watching it, and the way that they played that between you would see Pearl Mackey, and then you would see the Cyberman. She was playing herself, and then when you saw other people observe her, she was a Cyberman, so she was very scary. And it's really interesting how they did such a good job with that original design of the Cyberman. And still made it like really freaky, because that could just as easily, with the wrong costuming or the wrong direction or whatever, look like somebody with a sock over their head, and which is kind of what it looked like.
What it was back in 1966.
Yeah, exactly. The thing that I noticed was really interesting, that the gloves, you know, they weren't full. I mean, they really did recapture the sort of spit and polish nature of those original costumes, because the gloves weren't like full gloves. It was like cloth in one section, and then it looked like surgical, like these little rubber things over the fingers that you had like back in like the 1960s and 50s. Like, I remember these sort of things that you used to kind of put over your finger. Like, it's just like really interesting to me how much they were able to sort of keep that design faithful, but also make it still creepy. And work really well. But I mean, so once the Missies sort of kill each other, that's when you sort of get to the very end, and there's sort of a giant battle royale. Nortle gets all the humans or whatever. What are they called? What's that? Mondal?
The Mondasians.
Mondasians, that's right. Mondasians to five levels above. Which, what was the explanation for that? Because I was like, wait, you could come down, but you can't go back up? What was the deal with that? That didn't make any sense to me.
I mean, why couldn't he get to his TARDIS?
Yeah.
Because, I mean, they were playing a little fast and loose with the time streams going in different grades.
It's like we can only go five levels up, and I was like, why?
Well, he said, no, well, we can go five levels up because that's the next farming level. Like, that's the next habitable level. I think it's the closest one. It's like when you're in a burning building, you don't have to leave the building. You just have to go, like, two floors below the fire, and you'll be okay.
Interesting. Supposedly. But why couldn't they go all the way up?
Because if they went, by the time they got up there, they would be moving so slowly compared to the Cybermen. The Cybermen would be able to catch up to them and would be able to outthink whatever they're doing by 1,000 years.
Yeah.
I mean, you saw that after they started killing the, version 1.0 Cybermen, what started popping up out of the floor were the really shiny Cybermen, the more modern.
Yeah, ones. Which I love. I love the Iron Man Cybermen. I love those.
Yeah.
I love the design. I love the Metropolis / Iron Man Cybermen. But, okay. So here's another question, because you are the Doctor Who nerd, and I have you on the line. So has this been the home base of the Cybermen the whole time?
Well,
the
Doctor explained it at some point during the episode. He said that, you humans are basically the same wherever you go, that whether it's Mondas or Telos or the 10th planet or the 14th planet or Pete's world, you're always trying to upgrade yourselves and it always goes wrong. So that's why there are these parallel evolutions of Cybermen. But the Mondasian ones were the original from the show. And we never really knew how they got their start, and that's why it was so clever that that John Simms' master said this is the genesis of the Cybermen, because that's like a callback to one of the greatest episodes, the genesis of the Daleks.
Yeah,
where, we've had Daleks from 1963 up till 1975, but we never really saw how they got started, and this took Tom Baker's fourth Doctor back to their home planet of Skaro, and you saw their evil scientist Davros create this race. So that's...
I did catch that, but I guess what I'm trying to say has this ship been the home base of all the Cybermen all this time, or are they a splinter cell at this point?
I think these were the originals from Mondas. But according to the Doctor, during this episode, he said that this seems to happen quite a bit.
What seems to happen? Oh, that humans upgrade themselves?
Exactly.
Yeah, no, I get that. I just, for me, it's like me being sort of the continuity nerd sometimes. I'm like, wait, so... And because I have not seen the old Cybermen episodes, and I just have a general knowledge of them, unlike the Daleks, I've gone back and watched some of the older episodes, like Genesis of the Daleks, and I think one of their very first appearance on Doctor Who back in the 60s with the first Doctor.
Did you see the Dalek episode that they had animated, the one they
I
recovered?
I haven't seen that yet. Good.
You saw it on
the big screen, right?
No, I saw it on my TV's not that big.
Oh, no, I think they actually showed it in theaters, too, didn't they?
They may have, but I didn't know. The BBC was airing it, like, one episode a week for 4 or 5 weeks.
Oh,
it was like they used to in the old days.
So I taped it
and watched it.
I missed it. But I guess, obviously the origin of the Daleks have had kind of different iterations. Like, I remember the black and white one and Genesis of the Daleks or whatever, but for me I'm like, is this ship the Cybermen's home, and is this where they have been operating out of, showing up in other Doctor Who episodes, or is there that planet Mondas, or did they leave Mondas? Like,
they did. I mean, this was like a colony ship.
Okay, so Mondas is probably like a dead planet, right? Or whatever.
I think so.
And they left it, And so this whole time, the whole series of Doctor Who, this is where the Cybermen come from.
This is where they get their start.
Okay, all right, okay, good. That's all I wanted to know. That's all I needed to know. Because I was like, okay, but they've said that they were from Mondas, but they never said there's never been anything about like a colony ship or that they were did not originate from their planet, that they did not you know what I'm saying? So this is kind of that was the other thing that I asked on Facebook, and a couple of people responded. I was like, wait, this is the very first time my arms are waving because I'm trying to explain what I'm saying. This is the very first time that they've ever like addressed how they were created, like shown it. And people were like, yeah. And I was like, what? How did we never do that? You know what I mean? I mean, I guess it's been talked about. And somebody else said that there was a radio serial or an audio adventure that addressed it. But so this is the very first time ever that they've ever shown it.
That them actually getting started? Yes.
Wow.
I believe that's correct.
That's amazing to me. And that's great that Stephen Moffat was like, screw it, I'm just going to do it. I'm going to show how they were like.
It's true.
That's so great that he took that, you know, and because I think that's the first time in modern era Who that anybody, I mean, Russell T. Davies played fast and loose sometimes with, you know, saying stuff, but he never went back and said, like, this is the way something was born. And Moffat has left his legacy now with this these two episodes and said, like, this is it. I'm showing it. This is the way it's done. Obviously, another writer could come and be like, no, 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 this was a splinter. Mondas is still there. And you know, and the master manipulated events to make those people start. But whatever. I think that's great. I love it. Anyway, let's get to the end.
Yes.
Because this is the big thing that I'm sort of
struggling with.
Yeah. Like, I'm very much like, it seems like a very sort of, lack of a better word, cheap Deus Ex Machina.
That's the exact
ending.
Right term.
And I was very disappointed. I mean, I love the way it sort of emotionally played out. Like, I was fine with that, but it was so confusing. The Doctor fights the Cybermen and he's blowing them up, blasting them, and he's quoting other episodes, old battles with the Cybermen and whatever, and then he gets shot. And
yeah.
There was a moment of confusion in our household where my daughter thought that Bill had actually been the one that had shot him, and I was like, no, I don't think so. I think that's just
We had the same moment of confusion.
Yeah, we were like and we were like, no. And so the Doctor gets blasted, and you're sort of feeling that he's going to regenerate, and he falls to the ground, and then it's like scorched earth, and you see the Cyberman Bill come up, and she's crying over the Doctor, and then what happens? Like, this is where I'm sort of like, suddenly they're transported to his TARDIS, and they're in the TARDIS, and the Water Girl shows up, and la 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 la, happy ending. Like, that to me was very much like
Pat. It was a very Pat ending.
I don't even know about Pat, just sort of lame to me, you know. I understand. The thing is okay, this is what bothers me, is that Bill is a great character. Pearl Mackey is a great actress. I honestly was hoping that she was going to stick around. Like, I was, why does she only have one season? For me, it's like they should have just given actress that played Clara a ton of money, had her stick around for the last season. Jenna Coleman, have her stick around instead of doing her Queen whatever show, which
was good.
It was okay. It wasn't great. I was very frustrated with it. She came across as a twit during the whole season. I was like, really? Give her some brains. The Crown was better. Anyway, the point is if you want to watch a show about royalty, The Crown is better. Anyway, my point is that I really, really fell like really in love with Bill, right? I really loved this character. And then obviously Moffat wants to give her sort of this tragic ending of being turned into a Cyberman. But then it's just sort of like, I'm just going to pull a happy ending out of my ass because that's what everyone wants, you know?
Because that's what I do. Because also, guess what? So how did this end? She's crying, and Cybermen don't cry.
Yeah.
But what happens is because the fluid alien Heather which is a great name for a fluid alien.
Sounds gross.
You know, knows when, because she exchanged bodily fluids with Bill, she left a little bit of her fluid with Bill. She knew where Bill was. She knew when Bill was in trouble, and she's like, I could track you that way.
So she couldn't show up 10 years ago before and, like,
you
help
would
her?
Think,
yeah.
Right?
I mean, it's just it's like that.
Well, I guess you know why, because at that point, Bill was like, "No, look, the doctor's coming for me." He said he was coming. The doctor's coming. He said he was coming. The doctor's coming. And remember also that the master cyber converted Bill like right before the doctor showed up. Like he said, "Oh, you missed her by like 2 hours."
Yeah, which was a great line. Great line. Yeah, she was here for 10 years, and you missed her by 2 hours. But still, like, I just...
No, it was dumb.
Really cheap writing. I feel like that, to me, is... Everyone wants Bill to have a happy ending, and someone else who's been on the podcast said on Facebook, like, oh, I was crying, and I'm like, I get that. I wasn't. Like, when Clara died, I was crying. Like, I was like, oh, my God.
Funny you should say Clara, because this ending was exactly the same as Clara's ending.
That's what everyone's saying
on the
internet.
She was dead, and then, you know, she has a... her heart's going to stop beating, and just before it stops beating, they yank her out of her time and stick her in a restaurant TARDIS, and she's now traveling the world, the universe, in a restaurant TARDIS with Schilder, Missy,
So again, Moffat repeating himself.
Right.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. It's interesting though, because when Clara actually died, there were tears wept in our house with me and my daughter. We were like, "Oh my gosh, this is so sad," you know. But when Bill died, I was definitely. But she didn't really die, you know what I mean? She just kind of like left.
Fall.
Right. But how did they end up in the TARDIS? That's what I don't get. Did the water woman?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yes.
That's lame. Yes. The other reason that it's lame is because the resolution of this whole 2-episode arc is the doctor doesn't resolve it. The doctor fails, basically almost dies, and there's no resolution on his part. It's not even Bill who saves him. It's sort of Bill's girlfriend, Heather,
right.
Water Woman, you know. And to me, that's just... I mean, it should either be the companion, or it should be the doctor who saves people, or at the very least a companion on a rare occasion who is the one that pulls everything out. You know what I'm saying? And
not,
to me,
right.
this
not just some random angel,
not just figure. Some random sort of like, yeah, exactly. Angel is a good term. And for me, that's what was disappointing. I'm not going to lie. I'm happy that Bill had a happy ending. But to me, it was also sort of – it's also the same sort of thing that it's been done in comics. It's been done in other movies and stuff where somebody sort of like Close Encounters of the Third Kind, right? Like and obviously this is not a good comparison because Bill doesn't really have children or a family that like really cares for her that she really likes. You know,
her stepmom's a piece of crap.
Yeah, her stepmom's terrible. But, you know, there's that sort of thing. And, you know, Steven Spielberg has addressed it in interviews where Richard Dreyfuss gets on the spaceship and he's like, see you later, everybody. You know, right. He forgets that he has a wife and 2 sons. And obviously his suburban life is portrayed as being kind of miserable. But at the same time, it's like, bye-bye, spaceship, see you later. And that's sort of like... There's no, like, I'm not going to be human anymore. I'm not going to be on Earth. But then that's sort of wiped away, too, with the Heather saying, oh, well, you can be whatever you want. Do you want to me to make you human again? We can go wherever you want to show up. And it's like, really, you're just converted into a god. And there's no, you were put through this horrible trial of being, and there's nothing sort of left of that. There's no resonance, and then the character just disappears. There's no reason for her really not to stick around, other than the fact that they don't want her on the show anymore. I mean, she could be an omniscient water alien hanging out with the doctor. You know, she could have just been like, hey, Heather, let's hang out with the doc. I mean, they're not dead. There's no reason that they can't hang out on the TARDIS. They don't
clearly
say like.
The BBC hates black people.
Oh, no. Well, I don't know.
Well, let's see. Martha only gets 1 season and she's booted off. Mickey doesn't even become a real companion. it's not fair.
Well, and that is the sort of...
Bill gets a hole blown in her.
Yeah. That is sort of the thing that I was sort of treading on, too, where I was like, Bill, I mean, I guess you could say it's all good because Bill sort of gets transformed into this omniscient water cosmic entity. Okay, fine. But it just... I don't know. It seems like an ending that stripped her of all humanity and really of depth. And I don't know. I was very disappointed. For me,
how do you grow as a character if you're now omnipotent?
Yeah, I mean, well, and I mean, she's not going to be around anymore. Maybe she'll show up in future seasons or whatever. But it just seemed like a very like happy ending. Okay, bye. You know, thanks for everything. You know,
that wasn't even the ending because then. Yeah. Then actually, I think the coolest ending really happened is that, you know, the doctor puffs out of his TARDIS wherever they planted him. We're not sure.
And he's starting to regenerate, like, and he doesn't.
And he's
want
like,
to.
I don't want to do that. I'm, which I'm not sure why he doesn't want to, but I guess he's sick and tired of regenerating.
Well, he's like, he says that line that David Tennant sent was,
I don't want to go.
I don't want to go. And I think, you know, and I love that because I think the Tennant, that Tennant episode. Really addressed for the first time, like that it is a sort of death. You know what I mean? I am becoming a whole other person. I like who I am. And, you know, even though I'm going to remember everything and remember everyone and change into another body, A, I don't know what I'm going to change into. That seems to be sort of the thing. And then B, it's a whole other personality and I like who I am. So I really, that was one of the things that the Tennant years.
Oh yeah. I like that interpretation that, you know, like, right. He's In the day of the doctor, they said they refer to the 10th doctor as the man who regrets and the 11th doctor as the man who forgets. and then, so now he's the one who like got himself back together. I mean, in fact, that was one of the great things that he was actually an older actor, an older visaged person playing the doctor is that, you know, the 10 and 11 were so young looking. It's like he was having a midlife crisis. But here he's like he's a mature adult person who's like in command of his facilities and his faculties, and I think that's a good. I like your interpretation that he doesn't want to go because he's happy with who he is now.
Yeah. I mean, I feel like I mean, it's like anything. I mean, it's like what we. They're not dying, but it's what we humans, you know, as we're the reason we're afraid of death is like the unknown. And we don't know. But to him, there is an unknown. He will still live on. He will have all his memories. He will know. But he will be very different. And almost everyone has been different. And to me, that completely makes sense. 100%. Like, I get it. And I love that Capaldi did a great job of playing that. Like, I don't want to go. I mean, it does play a little less hollow to me if I didn't know that he was leaving. Like, if they had kept it a secret that he, you know, if they had said like, oh, he's going to stay on. And then, you know, the Christmas episode happens and he regenerates and we were lying, you know, that sort of thing. Like, but we know that he's leaving. So we know that he's going to regenerate. So it's a little kind of less sad for me, but Capaldi, first of all, Capaldi, I'm going to miss him. I mean, obviously we've got the Christmas episode, but I think he's been a fantastic doctor with fantastic presence, fantastic attitude with lukewarm writing to back him up a little bit. Like, writing that could have been much better across his three seasons. That's my opinion. I loved him. And
I mean, the writing for him was still better than it was for, say, I don't know, Colin Baker. But there were some really shit episodes back for the Sixth Doctor, which is a shame because he had a great presence.
Some
of the writing was weak.
Well, you know, and so then the final reveal at the end is like he shows up on this winter planet or in Antarctica or outside Superman's Fortress of Solitude, whatever.
Right.
And he's very much like, I don't want to regenerate. And you get this sort of the actor that plays this was the actor that played the original Doctor Who, which I don't know his name. You must know his name, but
the actor. Well, this is he played. Richard Hartnell.
Yeah, exactly.
And the actor is David Bradley.
Yes.
He played him in that documentary.
Special. Yeah.
An Adventure in Space and Time.
Yeah, which was great, and it's so great that they brought him back because the big reveal is that he's come to a place where it's the first Doctor.
Right, and in fact, the funny thing is that the Doctor, the 12, you know, he says, the other guy asks him, who are you? He says, I'm the Doctor.
Yeah.
And the other one says, oh, no, my dear boy. I'm the, you may be a Doctor, but I'm the Doctor, the original, you might say.
Yeah. So great. And he did it in the voice. Like, he played it.
Oh, he's,
he did a great job.
Really good at it.
Yeah, he did a great job because I have seen some of those early episodes and I was like, oh, wow, you kind of nailed it. And then at the very last frame, he like sort of cocks his eyebrow and like tilts his head. And I was like, Wow, great job. So what was your thought when that popped up?
I love multi-Doctor episodes. So I think this Christmas episode is going to be possibly great.
Yes.
Unlike maybe the last one, which I wasn't.
It was okay. Yeah.
I'm curious to see. There was an episode in the 1980s. It was the 20th anniversary episode, 1983, called The Five Doctors. That Tom Baker actually wasn't really in much of, but they had somebody had to play William Hartnell because he was dead already.
Sure.
They had this guy Richard Herndahl play the first Doctor. So now they've got somebody else playing the first Doctor. I've always liked the first Doctor because he's very cranky and cantankerous. And that's how I like my Doctors.
I know that's how you like your Doctors. So you're excited for the Christmas episode. Did you know that was coming?
No, I did not.
So you were surprised.
To be honest, I didn't even know when John Sim was supposed to show up on the show because I was deliberately like unfollowing the Doctor Who Facebook page, and I stopped watching all the coming attractions, so I really kept myself in the dark. At the end of World Enough in Time, when John Sim pops up and he rips the mask off in very Scooby-Doo fashion, I was thinking, oh my god, there he is, he's finally showed up.
That's great.
You know, I was actually shocked.
Yeah, that's great. All right, well, and so everyone, for old Who nerds, you got like a very special treat at the very end of that episode because I was very excited. Of course, my daughter was like, who's that? Like, what's the big deal? And I had to explain to her. I was like, that's the very first Doctor. And she's like, oh, okay. So I'm thinking maybe early tomorrow on 4th of July, we're recording this on the 3rd of July, I will break out an episode of I think I have the first episodes of Doctor Who on DVD somewhere. So I will have to break that out because I actually got them a long time ago. So
well, there was an Unearthly Child and the Aztecs were available.
They were
on Netflix for a while. I think they're gone.
The Aztecs is horrible.
It's bad. It's terrible.
It's like really rough. Really rough.
I would not even show that to her because it's just, it's difficult to watch.
Yeah, no, it's rough. And it's especially being half Latin myself, it's really rough. Like, you know, where they're like going to visit. Yeah. And I'm like, wow, this is really bad. But anyway, I'm very excited for the Christmas episode. I'm very excited to find out what they do with who the next Doctor will be. There's a lot of rumors that it is going to be a woman this time, which would be really fun. Oh, sorry, did I ruin that for you?
No. I mean, I've heard the rumors, but I thought that was just talk, that it could be anybody. It could be Idris Elba. It could be, you know, Rowan Atkinson.
Oh, God, no. But, I think even Haley Atwell, Peggy Carter was sort of campaigning for it a little bit.
Oh,
was
yeah.
Even saying that she would love to, which I would be like, oh my God, forget it. Not only would we have an awesome Doctor, but you would have one to lust after while you watch.
Really?
So, it would be like, no way. But, all right. Any final thoughts on this, Doctor Who season 10 finale, which was really, you know, really spectacular for me. They did repeat some themes and some plot lines and stuff like that, but they changed them enough to where I, you know, again, directed very well. I it was very compelling, and there were definitely a lot of, particularly the scenes with Missy and the Master, like gasp episodes where I was like,
totally.
Gasp moments where I was like, yeah. But final thoughts on your part?
I think that it was very well executed. I liked the two-part ending. it was, you know, it's always nice to see John Sim twirl his mustache.
Yes.
And, you know, I thought that it was really, it was an interesting take on, Nardole as a companion who actually even ends up getting a girlfriend at the end, you know, like sort of the mother figure in the nursery.
That's right.
Overall, I thought that the season itself ended on a very strong note.
Cool. Yeah, me too. And I think it's a really good way to top off the 200th episode of Part-Time Fanboy, which this has been. I love that we're talking about something that we both really love. My name is Christian Horn, and on the other side is the Doctor Who expert scholar, Barry Negrin. I'm always thankful to you for coming on. Thank you for coming on.
And I'm always thankful for you to have me.
You can find us on parttimefanboy.com. We are on Facebook. We are on Twitter. We are on Instagram. You can email us at ptf@parttimefanboy.com. Thank you for listening, and we will be back sooner than a month, I hope, for the next 201st episode of Part-Time Fanboy. Thank you for listening. Bye.
Part-time fanboy doing my thing.
I'm doing part-time. Part-time fanboy.